Lynn, you came and visited Mom the week before Gold Beach, and you were remembering some stories, and I was just wondering if you could retell some of them.
Stop me, because I know a lot of them, and this is my first one, too. I wasn't at the other one. So the story that I talked to Betty about was stories about my grandparents and her grandparents, and the house, they had two houses, and my dad said they had one that was just a small one story, like a maybe two room and an outdoor toilet, and that was in, what's the name of that a town south, used to be a town,
Georgetown,
thank you, yeah. And of course that's all incorporated in Seattle now. So then they bought a house, and I think he was just, I don't know, not very old. I think he was like 7 or 8 or something like that. And he remembered, and I thought it was the old house. So I was telling Betty memories my dad told me, and that would be Esther's brother. So he said about Grandma Mextra that she was really brave, but she was never quiet about it. Mm-hmm. And he said that when they moved in, the furnace blew up, and the smoke was rolling up from underneath, you know, in those houses. The basement was, you guys may remember, I don't know, it may have been unfinished or not, I don't know, but I got a picture, because a lot of basements were unfinished with just the furnace in them. And the stairs down from the kitchen. So she said, well, that would have had to been the new house. Mm-hmm. And she said the stove for some reason blew up. And smoke, black smoke was rolling out of underneath the stairs.
The furnace blew up.
Yeah, the furnace, the big furnace. I imagine it was coal.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said that Grandma Mextroth was grabbing buckets of water out of the sink and running down the stairs, and then throwing it on the stove and running back up again. But she said that she screamed. She started screaming when the stove blew, and she was one long, continuous scream all the way while she was running back and forth and back and forth and dumping water. And he said that's the way it was. And it was so neat, because Betty was saying, I remember where that'd be. That would be the new house. And she says, I remembered the basement. So I had never been that I remember. I had been at that house, but I was really small. The only memory I have of Grandpa Mextroth was as a little girl. I remember him holding me and playing an old, like, record player, you know, those big, I think it was a plastic disc, and it was a round one. I know it was cylinder, because I've seen both, and sometimes you superimpose memories if you're not careful. But it was an old disc like that, real early, and holding me and looking over and seeing the light come through glass curtains somewhere in that house. And that's all, the only personal memory I have of that is that house. But he taught me a lot of stuff like that. And apparently, Esther and Dad fought all the time. And that makes sense, because they were brother and sister. So, but I guess Grandma Mextroth, when she got mad at Dad, she chased him with a broom. And one story, Dad told me they'd been jumping on the bed, and they broke the bed railings. So I think Esther and Dad, Adeline kind of stayed out of this stuff, you know, she was a lot younger. They were going down and getting books from the bookshelf, just kind of walking back up the stairs. And for a while, Grandma watched them, and then she realized, why were they doing that, you know? Well, apparently they were going to put the books underneath the bed so they could make the bed over it so that no one would ever realize that it was broken. And it did remind me of the story.
Until they noticed the books were missing.
Yeah, they were like,
looking for
just,
a book.
Yeah, marching back and forth and marching back and forth. And it reminded me, because Dad talked about this after his story. It's a friend of mine, Cheryl, that some of you guys met. You remember Cheryl came down and she picked fruit in the house down at where you used to live.
Corvallis,
yeah. When you guys were moving out. And so she and I were upstairs dancing to some music. And Dad was downstairs. And we ran into this, what they called a rubber plant, and we knocked it over. and we broke the plant. So Dad came upstairs, and he was going to yell at me, and he opened the door, and this, my dad was that way. Your great uncle, your uncle was that way. He was, like, stomped everywhere. He was really loud, and he slammed the door open, and I'm like, I'm trying to hold the door, right, because that was the thing. I don't want him seeing the plants over. And so I'm smashed against the refrigerator, you know, and he's starting to yell at me, and he sees Cheryl immediately. He changes the personality completely. And, oh, Cheryl, you know, I'm over there, and he's letting the door back so I can breathe. And we told him what happened, so we went out. And my mother had just, she'd been working, she bought a white wool rug. So he helped us put all the dirt back in the planter and fix it up so that you couldn't even tell anyone knocked this rubber plant down. And it was fine till my mother watered it, because the plant had, the bottom of it had broken. So as soon as she watered it, there was dirt all over, you know, the rug. And, Dad, I said, you know, we kind of knocked it over, and Dad put it back with us. So I was trying to blame it on Dad. That just reminded me of that story.
What are some of your earliest memories of my mom?
Your mom, I remember your mom, actually, and I remember Grandpa as both as being this warm, really warm presence. Just really, your mom is really just open, and she loved seeing me. And so I just remember her, and see, that was before you guys were born, so for a while I was her little girl. Whenever we'd come over, I was her little girl. And I remember Chuck, and we would open a present Christmas, and we'd come over to Seattle, and we got one present in the morning. And then Esther always had a big dinner and had presents, and we had to wait and wait and wait, and we're like, because we're just little, but we'd haul out Chuck's blocks. We had these really neat old sets of, like, what were those called? They call them Lego blocks now, but they were, yes, little blocks. And he had all these little figures from World War One and
truck soldiers. Yeah.
And we'd play out there, and she would just watch us. She was older. She was 20 when I was born. I was born in 44. So, and I just remember, she was just always this happy, beautiful presence. She was just beautiful, and I just here worshipped her. And she, you know, and a lot of things centered around Chuck, and that was a good thing because he needed that kind of stimulation, and he was always a part of the family. Mm-hmm. And so that's what, and we'd always have Christmas. When we lived in Seattle, we always had Christmases over there. And Dad had lived in Spokane and lived with my mom when they first got married. And then when Grandma and Grandpa got sick, they moved back to help take care. And Esther and
Adeline,
Dad and Adeline would all share it so that everybody got breaks. And I remember that. So we had 5 years there. And my brother's, he's 4 years older than me, sometimes five or another. So I remember when we were in the house, he was 8 or 7 or even, because this is well before we moved. We moved to Lewiston, Idaho, when I was 5 years old. Dad got transferred. But I remember that my brother left the house, and it was in Seattle. It was overlooking the Sound, because you could see the ferry boats from our house. And he decided he was going to go to Adeline's house. And my folks were calling frantically, trying to find my brother everywhere. And finally, Adeline called him and said, "Ted's here." And he couldn't have been more than 6, I think, or something like that. I don't remember if I was 6. He had walked a considerable ways. No freeways then, right? And he'd gone clear over
to Beacon Hill.
To Beacon Hill. That's right. West Seattle. Because it was over by White Center in Seattle. So he'd walk all the way over. And we were kind of terrors, Ted and I. We were always fighting constantly. I'm still scarred up. And so Gordon always counted the money at the for the church. And I remember when we came, and I never realized how much Gordon cared about, because they couldn't have kids. And I think it was because of the DDT. And I think that's why he got cancer too. Oh. So he was sterile, so he couldn't have children. Mm. So Ted and I were his kids. But we were like nightmares compared to a lot of other kids in the family. So I always remember him gathering the money up. And for years I thought, you know, I was afraid we'd steal it or something. But then I realized that, you know, they were nice, neat little piles. And, you know, I was just a little kid and we were, mm-hmm. Ted and I were always fighting constantly, mm-hmm. constantly. When I send those movies to you, you'll see I'm opening Christmas presents and he's got a gun. He just got it for Christmas and he's firing point blank at my head. And I'm ignoring it. You know, I'm so used to it. I'm opening my presents, you know. So I can't imagine what it was like. But I never had the feeling, except for that one time seeing him pull all that money and put it back in his money church money pouch, that it kind of scared me because I really loved him, but they were so gentle. And I look at those movies now and see how the way he looked at us, you know, and understand that for a long time until you guys came along, we were the replacement. We were the children, you know. Because Chuck had grown, he was a teenager pretty much, and it was just Ted and I, you know, and I think we were the wildest children they ever had. Your mom wasn't wild. She was just sweet. And I do remember staying in her room after that she had moved out when I'd come over there with a little dresser that Dad had made.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Dad had made the little dresser?
My dad had made the little dresser.
That I have the dresser
good.
At my house.
Good,
so
that's
yes,
a good place
is,
for it.
So that I didn't know who it was.
My dad actually, for all that I thought he had no patience, to be honest with you, I thought he might not have been a good kid in school because he said that he was in shop all afternoon. And in the schools where I taught, if you're in shop all afternoon, it's because no one wanted to put up with you, you know? And then I understand, and you know, we should go back to that system. You had to pass your basic classes. And if you didn't pass your basic classes, even though woodworking was such a valuable thing to do, you couldn't be in shop until you did it. And in the afternoons, they would take those kids and tutor them. That's what Dad said. For math and English and things like that till they got to a certain point and then they could take shop classes. If you pass and you did all right, then you could take shop. And now we think of, you know, well, which I always wanted to take shop and I couldn't. I had to take sewing.
Yeah.
And now I could use it because I'm remodeling, you
yeah.
know, and I'm a wood carver. So. But Dad taught me a lot and that's one thing I do have that I still use. I have Grandpa's drills.
Oh, neat.
And I just got through fencing the backyard of my house
mm-hmm.
and putting, sinking the cement, my then 12-year-old grandson and I, sinking the cement posts and putting the balances on them and everything, and then taking those old drills and drilling the holes for the metal gates. And I was sitting there, and I was trying to drill, and I hadn't used the drills for a while. And it's, I mean, I'm not saying it's
hand drills.
They're old, big old hand drills. And I was doing it, and I mean, those drill bits are like fat.
Yeah.
You know? And I heard in this voice, "Season up on you." And I thought, yeah, it is. So I went in and I got some oil, and I oiled it up, and it worked perfectly. Why that happened, I don't know, but it was just I was just out there in the sun. Chance was gone, and I was. We'd driven all the fence posts in and everything, and I was just setting the gates then and thinking, oh, I used to use this because I had used them on 2x4s before. So
this is great, but I would love to
go
back to Mom while we, yeah. to my mom, while we have just grandkids.
Then I'd like to ask, when were you born?
1944. October 27th, 3 days before Halloween.
But It helps me to straighten out my memories of the Seattle experience because I was realizing that you were such a little flower girl at our wedding.
I think I was like turning four or three or something like
three and a half.
So my memories of Georgetown and the houses and things go back before that, not a lot, but 1942 is when I started.
For two years, yeah. So those are really valuable. They're valuable to me,
yeah.
too.
as I understood it, they on the property in Georgetown, Grandpa Mextroth, Betty's grandpa, made the decision to build a popular new house.
Mm-hmm.
And built the house, and his wife was not happy with it. But they lived in it for quite a while, and eventually did build the new house, which had brick walls and was quite substantial.
Yeah, nice. There were actually three, right? There was two rooms that was added on to.
I was only conscious of the two relatively big houses. And long after, when Betty's parents came to live with us in Corvallis, her mother was suffering from dementia, and she was always going around looking in our closets, trying to find the staircase to get to a room upstairs.
To the other house, yeah. Well, I think the first one they built onto it, right? Because somewhere along the way, Dad said in one of those houses, the bathroom had become an add-on because they didn't have indoor plumbing, and then they got indoor plumbing.
Well, anyway.
Dad, thinking back to that time period, what did you and Mom go over and visit at her grandparents' house?
Well,
I didn't
have space to tell everything in my comments.
Yeah.
And I talked about, in my early years in Seattle, going to family Sunday dinner. Well, more than half of those, nearly all of them for a while, were in South Seattle. After church, we drove all the way down to South Seattle and had dinner with Adeline, Gordon, and the grandparents. And Grandma Mextroth, of course, was semi-invalid, and Adeline was taking care of her. Adeline, the nurse, was living in the same house, she and Gordon.
Mm.
And Adeline was taking care of Grandma Mextroth. But it was fun for me to be part of a larger family, and the meals were always great. And I remember that my father was very much involved in using photography in connection with the business of sales training and advertising and things of that kind. And had bought a 16-millimeter camera and used it back in the 30s. And I borrowed the camera. So much could be said, but anyway, I got a hold of the camera and took some pictures. 16-millimeter movie film of the old house and Sunday dinners and things of that kind.
Wow.
I wonder where they are.
Yeah.
Interesting to find.
It would be, yeah.
Were you married in the new house or out of the garden?
No, we were married in the
Eastern
University District, the other side of Seattle.
Oh, okay.
The house where you remember my grandparents living for years and years and years.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That was
absolutely. I do remember the house that you lived in that you said looked out over the Sound.
Yeah.
And I was always kind of impressed because it had a kind of a nook off of the living room where the fireplace and seats on the built-in seats on the two sides of the fireplace seemed so homey. And I visited there several times and had meals there several times.
Yeah, I had a lot of visual images of those houses. Yeah. That house, for some reason, is me as I was.
It was a very nice, delightful house.
Yeah.
Well, how about another generation? The grandkids. What are some of your memories of Grandma?
Good question.
I could go first. I'm not a grandkid, but
you're that generation.
Yours
are
more recent. That's too easy.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, I don't remember meeting you guys. I remember meeting the Veg Dolls because they were more intimidating. But yeah, you guys were nicer.
Thanks.
But I remember the first time I was at Gold Beach and I was sharing a room with Ruth. And Ruth was tucked in, and then Betty came in and sat on her bed and sang, and it was just really sweet. And I don't think she knew that I was awake, but I thought it was really cute. She sang to Ruth and prayed, and it was adorable.
Yeah.
She really cared about her.
Oh, yeah. Lots and lots.
Well, that's kind of interesting, because one of my snapshot memories of Grandma is we were playing Extinction. And since it plays a lot like, it could have been Trouble or Parcheesi, but it was one of that style of games, and she had the ability to capture Ruth's piece. And my memory is, you know, I'm like 5 or 6 and very competitive. I want to win. And I couldn't understand why Grandma was saying, "Oh, but it's my own daughter." And just that really cute scene of her in angst over something that as a 5-year-old I couldn't understand.
You know, a lot of my childhood memories in general are, I don't have a very vivid memory of most of my childhood, but
I do.
Well, I'm sure you do. But one thing I do remember one year at Gold Beach, this is a while ago, we were playing Pictionary. And for some reason, I think I might have goaded Tim on in this respect, but I can't remember. But Timothy thought it would
was
be.
Was there anything that ever happened that wasn't you goading me on in some respect?
Yeah, what Philip did.
Oh.
Sometimes it was kind of a combo.
Or you would goad me on to goad him on. You know, 2 levels of removal to make it harder to trace back to the source. But I remember that Timothy thought it was hilarious and to yell out genitalia for every possible picture that was being drawn. And
to be fair, the first couple looked a lot like they might be.
But he kept on doing it multiple times, and Grandma was getting visibly uncomfortable and upset, and eventually, I don't remember what she said exactly, but it was clear that she was not happy with you.
Yeah.
I definitely remember a couple years that I went to Gold Beach a week early, and we went there for, I think, 2 weeks overall with me and Jeannie and then Ruth, Grandpa and Grandma.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of mini golf and a lot of Trouble and Sorry and I think Grandpa still never won a game of Sorry.
On the other hand, you didn't win at miniature golf.
I wasn't trying.
Oh, sure. That's certainly how it looked to us.
You sure love playing, though. I mean,
yeah.
I know one year that was as long as we can play miniature golf every day, I'll go for the extra.
As the
week.
Course got more dysfunctional, it got more and more fun.
Yeah.
They were like, "Really? This is like the 4th day in a row you've been here. It's the 2nd time today."
Yeah.
And
well,
the tricky part was getting your ball out of some of the sinkhole holes.
Play it where it lies.
Yeah, but yeah, it when there were just the 5 of us there, you needed to get out of the apartment sometimes, and miniature golf was a great way to do that. I remember at one point the woman quit charging us every time we came because we were just coming so much, and she felt bad.
Season pass.
Charging us over
Week
and
pass.
Over again. We sure had a lot of fun on the miniature golf, though.
Yeah, we sure did.
Yeah, including Mom. She enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah.
I remember some croquet.
Oh, yes,
oh,
croquet.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Dad, I have this faint memory, the house in Spokane, in the backyard, that was kind of one level, and then it kind of went down a little slope, and there was another level, and I have this memory that you guys would set up a croquet course that went from up to down and then back up again. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, it was a drop-off of about 3 feet. And we graded the lawn so that it was mowable, and went down that slope and leveled off again. That made it possible to have windows in the basement, at one end of the basement. We had that big basement with the fireplace.
Yeah.
It was kind of a general rec area, and we intended someday to finish the bathroom and put in ruse as we voted for a growing family. Mm-hmm. Never had a chance. But that was a fun house. Mm-hmm. Simple design architecturally, I'm sure that any architectural professor would have thought this is really pretty simple. But we thought it was wonderful.
Well, you guys had a lot of thinking went into that.
Well, yeah. When we first went to Spokane, we rented the house. And it was kind of a typical project house at that time. But we realized that it was pretty functional. So when about 2 years later, we took on the project of building a house, we really started with that concept and added on and changed things around and put in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And the house we ended up with, we really liked. Could have stayed there a long time.
Yeah.
Been very happy with the house. And a big lot, it had a nice view. It was right on the crest of the ridge. And it had a nice view out over everything and off to the mountains in the distance. We liked that. We bought the lot behind the house so nobody could build there, so we controlled our view, and eventually sold it to a contractor who guaranteed that he would restrict it in the following ways: wouldn't build anything that was tall or wouldn't be in this location on the lot. And yeah.
Well, Mark, something that's when you shared last night at the service about gravel road up a
mm-hmm.
mountain or hill or whatever, reminded me of a memory I have of Mom. We were living in Pittsburgh, and we went on a trip, and I think we went and saw the Roos cousins at the time, and did some traveling.
Went to New York and Washington, D.C. and
through Virginia. And then we, you know, I think we saw Monticello, and, you know, we did a whole bunch of traveling. Well, there was one day that we were all pretty tired. I know I was pretty tired. And we went on some historic path. Every 15 miles or so, there was a historic marker with history or something like that. And I just wanted to get to our destination. And Mom wanted to take that route, and she wanted to stop. And, you know, when you're riding a car, I think she was driving. Maybe Dad was driving, but I was like in the back seat trying to get some rest. And when the car goes, you kind of get to sleep. But then wake up every 15 minutes, stop, historic destination. She would read it out loud for everybody. Most people who are just waking up, and then over and over and over. If she, Mark, she can be kind of determined sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And that probably wasn't the day in my life I was the most happiest with my mother-in-law. But she wanted to get to every one of those markers and read them all out loud so that if anybody was listening...
I should have been on that trip.
Yeah. I really wasn't paying that much attention to what she was saying.
I
left the paragraph out of the comments that were finally read about my remembrances of Betty. The paragraph had to do with the trip from Seattle to Pittsburgh. And the point of the paragraph was that we had different ideas about traveling and seeing. When I went from one place to another, there was still a straight line that I could make the route just the way I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular trip in our old 35 Chevy, which was pretty well worn out by the time I bought it, and incidentally, this was very shortly after the Second World War, and cars were not generally, I mean, there was 5 years of non-production of automobiles, and they were scarce, and they were expensive. And so I bought this Chevy, 35 Chevy, in 1947. It was old, and they weren't so durable in those days either. I remember the doors on the car had wooden framing with steel covering over, sheet steel over the framing. And the wooden framing was already rotting out. But anyway, it was a kind of an risky trip. And we loaded everything that we could into the car and took off for Pittsburgh. And the point of the whole thing was that I wanted to get there, and she wanted to see everything. And we crossed the Continental Divide, I couldn't remember for sure, 7 or 9 times.
Yes.
I'm just glad it was an odd number.
she wanted to see this and that and the other thing. We were back and forth. And I think we have one of the memento pictures. She's sitting on a sign of the Continental Divide.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons I just couldn't leave that picture out of her sitting on the Continental Divide sign.
And I thought it was the time you crossed the Continental Divide.
Well, that was because you didn't look through all the pictures with me, because there's another picture of her by a different Continental Divide sign. But that was the one where she looked so cute.
Yes.
So
anyway, we did get to Pittsburgh. The old Chevy hung together, and we got there.
There's a story, and I don't know whether it was Seattle or Pittsburgh, but where Mom, I think it was Seattle, Mom and a friend or Adeline or Grandma had gone somewhere, and Mom stopped
that was,
to let them out.
After we were married.
Uh-huh.
And I was still a senior student at the UW, and something was coming up, and I really had to study, so I stayed home and studied. And I had taught Betty to drive very recently in the old 35 Chevy. And she and her mother took the old Chevy and went to South Seattle to see the grandparents. And when they came back, they came into the apartment very sheepishly. They'd had an accident with the car. And when I found out what the accident was, somehow they'd gotten a little too close in traffic to a brand new Cadillac, and they'd hooked the fender on the Cadillac with the bumper, and they tore the fender out of the Cadillac, and they had to stop and all kinds of, you know, exchange information and whatnot. They were very, so I went out to take a look at the old Chevy, and I discovered that the only thing that had happened to the old Chevy was they bent the bumper enough it didn't rattle anymore.
Became a mechanic.
Yeah. One memory I sure have of Mom, I mean, when we went through my teenage years, we had, I mean, we're both pretty strong-willed women, and I didn't know until years later when Dad said something about the fact that whenever he heard the two of us having a disagreement, he just made himself scarce because he didn't want to have to take sides. But, you know, despite that, she was such an incredible listener that I can never remember there being a time when I didn't want to talk with her. And I almost always came home from school and we'd sit down together at the kitchen table and talk. And as I got older, there were times when we'd make a pot of tea and share it between us while we talked. And so a pot of tea has always had a very special feeling for me when I've sat down with another woman, especially with a pot of tea, that it's a sharing time. And
is that why you won't drink tea with us boys?
No.
Well,
I can think of a couple occasions where that may have happened.
I was always impressed that Betty was, in our family, was the communicator. She managed to maintain a relationship with you kids where you would talk to her. And it was so good. That was a very important part of your growing up.
Yeah. And to think that she maintained that through my teenage years is an incredible tribute to her.
It wasn't contrived either, you know.
No.
The workshops on how you get along with people and everything like that, but that's just the way she was. So I wouldn't see her for a while. She went through all the kids and remembered everybody from Barry that was around the most, you know, to Zach and Zabe that were a lot younger, you know, and Jonay and Anne and everybody. And she remembered them not just as names, but she had the name to them, but she remembered the things that she'd seen about them. And it wasn't just to make conversations, because she really cared. And that she was always that way.
She remembered people and their names, and she remembered things about them, which was not something I was nearly as
good
at.
And the good things, you know, some people, as they get older, you hear all the other stuff, but that never concerned her.
The one, I have like three quick memories. The first thing is, one, you know, coming into the family, especially as soon as I was married into the family, there was no distinction. I was daughter.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
And that was wonderful. Yeah. And I say to this day to everyone that I had, you know, it's hard to say mother-in-law. You know,
mm-hmm.
I always called her mom, and I call you guys mom and dad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have to, you know, for... you know, being precise, you know, say mother-in-law, but it's always been ma. So that's number one. And the time I think that, you know, we actually bonded and became close that would go on forever is when Mark and I moved in with Esther and Albert, and I had to communicate with her so often about what was going on with mom and dad. I mean, it was always a good relationship before that, but that took it to a new level because having to communicate with what was happening with her parents and the house and everything meant many calls, just the two of us on the phone, and many conversations about how to cope with grandma. and
it was also occasionally strong-willed.
Yeah, it was.
that doesn't run in the family or anything.
And then on the humorous side, Dad's a cohort on this one, too. First of all, like Steve, my family was never late to anything. So I had to get used to walking into things like church late. And Calvin, before they added the seats in the back, there was often no seats anywhere at Calvin to sit, except in the very front, under the minister's nose. And we came in late, had to walk down the entire length of Calvin to sit down right in front of the minister with Adeline and Grandpa and Grandma Deutsch and Ruth and Mom, and I was the last one into, and Mark, and I was the last one into the aisle right in the front row, and Dad came in later because he'd been parking the car, and there was no room, and so he sat. He had to walk all the way down the aisle, too. But he sat one row behind and on the opposite aisle. Pastor was preaching. And I looked down the row. And every single person who was related to one another, with the exception of Grandpa and Grandma to them, was sound asleep. Also something that would not have been tolerated in my family, especially immediately in front of the pastor.
I was thinking also something that runs in the family.
And I look over to Dad, who also is not blood relatives with all of these people, and he was wide awake, and he looked at me and went, and I'm sitting there mortified at the whole row of sleeping people. However, I will say, Betty and Grandma Deutsch had it down the best. They could look as angelic as anyone who was sleeping in church. They looked like they were in an attitude of prayer, and there was no nodding the head.
And no snoring.
No one else had that pulled off, but Grandma had taught Betty evidently exactly what you needed to look like if you were going to sleep in church. There was no doubt in my mind that they were sound asleep.
That was one of the fun things when I was going through pictures. Was I could have put together a whole subgroup of just pictures of mom and others sleeping. I mean, there's just picture after picture after picture after picture of people sleeping, and it's so fun. And I have to admit that an amazing number of those pictures are of Dad asleep with a baby cuddled up with him. First it's me, and then Ruth, and then Mark, and then Philip, and then Nathan, and then Tim, and then Katie, and then Daniel. And they're beautiful. But mom sleeping sitting up, mom sleeping slumped over, mom sleeping lying down, mom sleeping pulled up tight in a corner of a sofa that someone else was still sitting on. They're delightful.
It's sleeping standing on her head.
Well, it was so funny because... when hospice was trying to help make sure we covered all the bases for the trip to Gold Beach, and the social worker, Laura, was very concerned that we not tire Mom out too much. And so she wanted to know, you know, was Mom going to feel free to excuse herself and go take a nap when she got tired? And I just looked at her and I said, she doesn't have to excuse herself. Whenever she needs to sleep, she just sleeps where she is. So does the rest of the family. It's just, that's how we do it. You know? And she was quite surprised. But
that last visit we were sitting there, it was so funny because we'd be talking about something and I'd say something and I don't know who would say it. Well, she's asleep. And then she'd ask a question. And she was listening.
Mm-hmm.
She was kind of
in and out.
You know, in and out. Yeah. But she always heard everything. And it was so funny because, like, she heard that. Oh, and then she'd start up again.
She'd start up again, yeah. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, there's Almonds have trouble with being late. And really, it's Deutsches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's Almonds, it's Deutsches. But the blood got mixed, so. Yeah. But, you know,
the Maxtrot slept during service. And
it's snored. The maternal line.
And snored.
But, you know, I honestly believe with her it was a combination of two things. One was that she cared so much about people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I can't tell you how many nights, you know, dinner was at a somewhat odd time or part of it got burned. But it was because she was listening to someone. And that was such a priority for her. When she was listening, you were where her focus was. And the other thing was that she was a perfectionist. And, I mean, if she was going to go somewhere, if she was going to do something, she wanted it just right. And for her, having everything along, you should have along, or everything prepared, you should have prepared, was more important than being on time. And I learned that one from her, too. much to my husband's
chagrin.
Thank you for the work.
Just grab and go. Come on, let's go.
Your grandmother used to ask before we went to the beach if we had our rubbers. And that worked until I became a teenager, and then I had to practice keeping a straight face. And my dad still is. Get your rubbers.
Yeah, she was very people focused.
Kind of related to what you were just talking about. Everything had to be planned and prepared. When we took on the youth group, first in Spokane, the church there, and then in Corvallis, she had never had any experience at all, but she took on the job of planning meals for the total of the evening of Friday and all day Saturday and Sunday through lunch for as many as 30 people. She wasn't particularly a cook. She'd never done anything of that kind before, but she took it on and did it. And I don't think the kids ever went hungry or anything of that kind. I was always just kind of amazed at how she was willing to take on the job and
make
do the best she could. And by golly, things usually work.
And part of what I remember so vividly about her and planning youth group events was it wasn't like she was just this adult who planned them and did them. She always had a group of the kids who did the planning under her, I guess I would say, tutelage.
She was a great leadership trainer.
She was a leader.
She always believed in involving the kids in doing the planning.
Yeah, and she knew how to actually end up with a result that worked. But she really got the kids to make the decision, so they had some real ownership in it. And then to coordinate, you know, everybody who was on a retreat had their turns doing different things. And in connection with that, I remember a retreat. It was at Silver Creek Falls, in that big old barn of a building. But it was your guys' anniversary. It was going to fall on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us knew about that, and I had let others know. We decided it'd be really fun to celebrate your anniversary. But the problem was when the food had been planned, they had planned cake for dessert on Saturday night and cookies for dessert on Sunday. And we needed to get that reversed so we could have a cake, you know, to celebrate the anniversary. And so the kids and I talked it over and decided that when it was time for dessert on Saturday night, maybe even a little before it really was quite time for dessert, the people who were in charge would just race the cookies out and start handing them out before Mom would possibly know what was happening. It would be too late then, you know, to go back on it. Oh, my goodness. She was furious. I mean, she took us aside and read us the riot. And, I mean, you know, people planned this. You needed to follow what was planned. And then the next day when we brought out the cake for the anniversary and celebrated the anniversary, she was rather sheepish and apologized. I don't think any of us really took that chewing out too seriously at the time, because we knew all would be forgiven the next day. But that was very typical. But something as simple as that, you have to follow the plan.
Well, a long time ago, we used to go to the beach, and I don't remember exactly where. I think it was over on the Push.
Yeah.
And that's the way it was. And your mom did most of the work of putting everything together. Esterwood Hogs had the list and everything. I was too young, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where she did, because everything was organized. There were a whole bunch of us. And again, we had to have boots. We had to have coats. We had blankets. We had all kinds of things. And it's interesting, the food was just hot dogs and marshmallows and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it was the organization that had to go on a certain way. Yeah. And Dad had to take a certain role, Mom took Adeline, yeah. And we all would go somewhere. I have pictures. I'll get
yeah.
some of those from all those. Did you, later on, did you guys go out to the beach out at La Push and places like
yes.
that?
Oh, yeah.
The big,
yeah,
big, it was a big thing, you know.
I have memories of fires on the beach at La Push. And Mark, in particular, was never satisfied with just a little fire. He always was looking for more and more stuff to pile on and pile on and pile on. He had some pretty good fires.
This was back
some of those fires are still burning.
I was going to say, this was back in the days when you just gathered up wood
yeah.
that was just lying
yeah.
around and
yeah.
built a fire. I mean, just very unlike
yeah.
like nowadays. But yeah, we have
oh,
some
it,
great
it
pictures
depends
of those.
On. I mean, I've been on camping trips where people still do things that way.
Yeah. But most populated coastal areas don't have
wood laying there.
Driftwood lying
yeah.
around that you're
oh,
allowed
oh,
to
yeah,
collect
okay.
up and
yeah.
set on
yeah.
fire.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not at all like $5 a bundle for twigs
yeah.
in
yeah.
California.
Yeah. yeah. yeah.
That's a bit tough, but the shock of having to buy little bundles of wood for a fire on the beach.
Well, gosh.
And now it's just the case in Oregon and Washington, just about everywhere. If you want it, you have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Although I think at Gold Beach, if you wanted to, you still find plenty of driftwood.
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah, probably could. Just real quick, Mark, I'm curious to check your memory on this. One thing I remember is that although Mom left to coordinate a lot of things, there were certain things she was happy to let slide. And so in some ways, we learned to take on some responsibilities younger than some kids would, and I think particularly of breakfast. I mean, by the time I was in maybe fifth grade, she didn't even get up in the morning. And, you know, I would get up and eat my breakfast and get my clothes on and go off to school. And it was, I mean, not every morning, but a lot of mornings, because she knew I could do it, and so she let me do it. Did you have...
Mark just slept in those mornings.
I mean, you were preschool at the time, so you wouldn't have needed to get up and go, but I was wondering, or did she have to wake you up to get you going so she got up and woke you?
My memory was having family breakfast together, so maybe we were in a different family. I don't know.
I remember that on the weekends, but like...
During the week, and that was one that, you know, before Dad would, I thought before Dad went off to teach, we'd often have breakfast in the morning, and sometimes... For a while, we'd have, you know, devotions, and that would fall off. And the same thing at night. Sometimes your devotions
yeah.
fall off. I remember getting together and having breakfast, nothing fancy, but actually...
But when did high school
yeah, Mom,
start?
Maybe you were the one
school?
That overslept, and she was just already back in bed.
I don't know. Maybe my memory's not so good.
Yeah, well, and maybe, you know, different periods of time, she handled things differently, too. Or you're remembering different mornings than I am. But yeah,
I think our folks came from a family where the women did that kind of thing, and it wasn't from any philosophy, but I think Grandpa worked something like, I don't know, 14 hours a day or something sometimes. I mean, he was not at home, and it was 6 days a week, so they just had Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's hard. It takes a couple generations and a change of society for that to change in a family. So you may have been the young prince like Ted thought he was. I don't know.
And I know by the time I got to high school, I was often late. So
yeah.
So something was going on there too, but I don't remember it specifically.
Yeah.
That's how I remember it, was that I was getting to school late, and they were saying, well, you know, your mom needs to get you. Well, my mom's not up. Yeah. So
I missed the bus enough times that ultimately mom
well,
told me
right.
I
you
had to.
You had a bus. Yeah. Go ahead. I was realizing I wasn't remember. I had a different remember.
Yeah.
Mom told you.
Ultimately, I had to walk to high school, and Crescent Valley wasn't very close to our house. I had to explain why I was late. Anyways.
What, not the trolley through the snow? That was Dad's story.
See, I was gone by the time you were in high school, so did not remember that at all. Yeah. Well, we do kind of need to move along, and I think it'd be great to do this again.
I think that maybe... you know, continuing at Thanksgiving or Christmas, if you could remember the microphone.
Sure. Well, I mean, at Thanksgiving, if it's going to be at your guys' place again, that would be very
easy
because I live so close.
Well, I'm assuming Thanksgiving's at our house.
I hope so.
I hope. I don't know if you guys can come, though. That's the issue.
I can.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't be able to come anywhere it was, right? Because you work that part of the week.
Yeah, I'm...
Right.
It's a very popular vacation time. We drew lots, and I did not win.
Well, it's really all about scheduling.
Yeah, I do too.
Katie,
if it was here and you did it at the right time of the day, you could still come.
And you're changing to
not have sleep for a whole